from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman chatting Syracuse basketball as they get themselves a little bit closer to the field of 68 teams for this NCAA tournament that is, you know, closer and closer and closer, and now just three games left on the regular season schedule, possibly a fourth being added, but we're not going to speculate into that right now. It is crunch time for Syracuse basketball, and just like always, they are right on the bubble. Currently on the outside looking in, obviously that Notre Dame game helps them because it's not a loss, but at the same time, you've just got to start racking these wins up, and with three games left, you've got to continue to get those wins stacked up, whether it's a quad one, quad two, quad three, doesn't matter. You need to basically win out to help solidify this resume because it's leaving a little bit to be desired, especially when you look 0-4 in quad one games so far this season. They've got to be able to grab one of those, and it's going to be a little bit of a tough situation for them given the remaining schedule, but definitely opportunity, one or two opportunities left. So wherever you're listening to us, or if you're watching us, hey, hello on YouTube. If you're on YouTube, give us a like, give us a subscription. Feel free to comment on there. We'll get in the replies with you over there. If you're listening to us on the podcast app, give us a subscription over there. We love to get that feedback, a rating, a review, anything you can. There are a lot of ways to get involved with us now. Ben, that Notre Dame game was, I mean, the tailor-made tale of two halves, and we overuse that phrase so much, but this was the situation where you really did need to look at it. Almost the tale of 30 minutes versus the last 10 minutes, Syracuse erases a massive deficit. It was nice to see them flip the switch on that aspect this year.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was about to say 30 versus 10, and I just went to look at it specifically. Trey Wirtz hits a three-pointer with 16:49 left in the second half. It's 55-35 for Notre Dame. And then Syracuse wins 75-67. It was one of the most depressing to one of the most exciting games that I've seen in my 3 years at Syracuse. It kind of, you know, another overused phrase, was a microcosm of this entire program, but I think overall encouraging for a few reasons, the first of which, and the most obvious of which, being Buddy Boeheim, who was pretty sensational in the game. 29 points, that's a career high, 5 threes in the second half. He was pulling up from everywhere and really couldn't miss. And Buddy, whose play I really haven't loved all year, is starting to trend upwards. He's double digits in 4 of the last 5, 15 plus in 3 of the last 5. And the more consistent he gets with the three ball, you know, it's either got to be him or Girard. And if it's Buddy, then this team can go places that we were maybe expecting at the beginning of the year that haven't come to fruition, because Buddy has the talent. When it comes together, it's really lethal to watch this guy shoot.
I think the numbers right now are in games where Buddy has hit 3 or more 3s, Syracuse is 7-1. And over the last 5-game span, I believe Buddy is shooting 50% from 3. at about a 16 of 32 clip, I believe is the exact number there. Buddy has been very, very good over this last five-game stretch, starting to definitely find that stride that you were asking for all throughout the non-conference slate and the early portions of the ACC slate. You wanted to see him get back into that rhythm. And everyone says, you know, he's a shooter, he's a rhythm guy, you've got to get him back into the rhythm, but it gets frustrating. It gets frustrating to watch a guy that you're trying to continue to allow to take those threes and take those shots to get back into the rhythm. But boy, I mean, it's nice when it finally happens. And I think, I mean, knock on wood for Syracuse's sake, I think it has finally happened where he's gotten back into that rhythm, gotten back into that stride. And Ben, is this not what we've sort of talked about all year, where you look at the three guards and you play who needs to be played at that given moment? In this game, it was Buddy and Kidari. Joe's had a decent stretch of three or four games before this game against Notre Dame. Obviously, was not his day against the Fighting Irish, but in a couple of games past, he really showed himself and has had some solid halves and solid games overall. That's exactly what Jim has stressed. I think that's what we've stressed. You got to play who needs to play, and that's becoming a really good conversation for Syracuse. And it seems like game in and game out, the two that you're going to rely on have been rotating. And that's not the worst problem to have when you've got someone that's going to step up for someone else and a really, really good rhythm looking out of your three guards right now.
Yeah, I mean, Buddy's going to get all the shine. Kidari, especially when Syracuse started pressing, which is one of the few factors that really turned the game over and allowed Syracuse to get back into it. Kidari has three steals. I bet you he was responsible for five or six of the nine that Syracuse had on the day because of his length. And I've all season really been of the thought that Joe and Buddy give you a similar thing on the court. They're not the same player. You know, Buddy's probably a bit better of a three-point shooter. Joe does a little bit more of the other stuff. But I think you kind of want to find which one of Joe and Buddy is on their day, is going to score today. And very early on, it was clear Buddy was aggressive, and I think he had seven of the first 11 for Syracuse or something like that. So you find Buddy, he's going to be a big scorer today. You compliment him with Kidari, who's been passing the ball pretty well. He was passing better than his one assist would suggest, and is just making smart plays on both sides of the floor. I think that it's not the situation where, you know, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. Syracuse has three guards here, and they can complement each other in terms of Kidari working off of either of these shooters pretty well, to the point where as long as one of them is on, Syracuse is in good shape.
Kidari with three steals, that puts him at a steal percentage now of 5.4%, which is the best mark in college basketball. So it finally puts him into the rankings where he should be, because he is a steal machine out there on the court. That length at the top of the zone is sort of what has been missed when you look at Gerard. And obviously Boeheim has that length, but he doesn't have that same presence in the passing lanes. It's a really, really valuable thing that Kidari brought to the table and really helped spark a Syracuse press that Jim has been very critical of early season. I know it's been recirculating itself across the media. Jim said early on this year that this team can't press a pair of pants. Well, they pressed the absolute shenanigans out of Notre Dame, and that is possibly the key reason to why they came back in this game and are able to erase a 20-point deficit for the first time since 2005. This was really, it was a grit game. It showed that this team knows where they are right now. They know the situation. They know they're on the outside looking in of the NCAA tournament. They needed to claw their way back. And I forget who it was. I was listening to some sports talk radio here in Central New York last week, and someone was saying, and I apologize if you're listening and I don't remember who it was, someone was saying, I don't care how it happens. I don't care if it's a 20-point win. I don't care if it's a 1-point win. I don't care if you win because the other team quit. You need to win. I think it was Roosevelt Bowie. Roosevelt Bowie on ESPN Radio Syracuse came on and said that it doesn't matter how you win. And when you're on the outside looking in and you're playing ACC competition, even in a down year, even in a Notre Dame team that is not incredible, but they've still been competitive and are starting to find their stride, a really talented Notre Dame team, a win's a win. And you showed that grit. You showed you're ready to compete. And you showed that, hey, we know where we're at, and we're going to claw our way into the tournament if we keep playing like this.
Yeah, and it was really a can't lose. And I think that's different than a must win. A must win helps you. I can't lose as a season ender. I think, you know, Notre Dame, I think, is a pretty well-respected team. But due to some of the losses, you know, that's not a quad two win even. That's a quad three win probably for the Orange. But, you know, I think that's a game that Syracuse had to have at halftime. The season looks like it's pretty much over. And then you stand up off the mat and continue to throw punches. And, you know, this team, for as much angst as it causes the Central New York community, seems to play its best when the backs are against the wall and something's got to give and they find this extra gear. And really, SU found it on the back of a pretty strong individual performance, not to take away from Dolezal or Guerrier, who had sizable contributions as well. But we'll see if someone else can be Buddy Boeheim next game if SU needs it, because as much as this was a gutsy performance and a strong one for, you know, the final 17 minutes, to rely on something like this going up against the next three teams Syracuse is going to play, which we'll get into in a bit, that's going to be less successful, I think, trying to wait this long. Of course, Syracuse didn't want to, but having to wait this long and rely on such a strong individual effort, it's going to need to be more of a collective, especially from guys like Alan Griffin.
Yeah. Jerry McNamara was talking about it a little bit last week about how the sort of natural progression of a game day and the natural high that you get building up to a tip off, it's really thrown off when you get that late of a cancellation, that late of a postponement. Technically, we all know that game will 99.9% not be rescheduled, technically postponed, but it's been canceled. It's tough to go through that stretch. And it happened the first time when Syracuse was supposed to play Louisville and then they come out flat the next time they hit the court. That was the issue where you sort of saw it, and they come out and they get absolutely spanked in the first half against Clemson. And the second half, by the time they figured things out, it was too little too late. You're already down 20 points. That was the same thing with Notre Dame, that same first half rut. They find themselves down by double digits, even more double digits, over 10 points. And they were able to claw their way out of it this time, but it's tough to have that sort of flow torn away from you and then try and get back in and have really productive practices and really get into the rhythm that you need to get into a game. So finally, Syracuse, fortunate to be on the winning end of a game like that, where they did struggle off of a 1 week pause where it wasn't supposed to be a 1 week pause, but now they've got a quick turnaround, their quickest turnaround of the year. They're playing a Duke team that, my God, I don't know what to say about them, to be honest. They lose 6 of 8 in a stretch, but they've won 3 straight, including a very, very solid win against Virginia. The 3 straight wins makes this trip down to Durham for Syracuse a quad one game, which they desperately need. As we mentioned, Syracuse 0-4 in quad one games. And before Ben and I give our takes on this matchup and dive into some specifics and a little bit of things such as keys to watch and things along those lines, we caught up with David Shumate earlier today. He is the radio play-by-play of Duke men's basketball and Duke football. And he sort of gave us the ins and outs and tried to shine a little bit of light as to what is going on with Duke men's basketball, because they are just a ball of chaos right now and anything goes over in Durham. We're now joined by David Shumate. He is the radio play-by-play for Duke men's basketball. And David, I mean, It's been a crazy couple of weeks over in Duke basketball land. But first and foremost, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today.
No, for sure. Yeah, it's been a really the whole year has been kind of strange and a wild roller coaster. Hopefully the Blue Devils are on an upswing right now because they've won 3 in a row and seem to be playing some of their best ball of the year.
Now, Jim Boeheim agrees with that statement, and he's gotten a little bit of flack for maybe the way he phrased this with the regards to Jalen Johnson leaving and or finishing out the season, not playing with Duke today. What have you sort of seen in that 3-game stretch since? Jim says it's the best basketball he's seen Duke play. It seems like you agree. What are the differences that you've sort of seen in that stretch?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, and this is just kind of the benefit of being around practice and seeing the guys a lot, is they're growing up. I mean, you know, Duke won on Saturday night against Virginia, but it was just their 18th game of the season. You know, normally at this time of year, you're getting towards 30. So you've got about an 8-9 game gap where you have that going on. And then the other thing that's obvious is the defense and the way they've been able to get down in a defensive stance, more of a commitment on that end of the floor. And I personally think it's made their offense better because they're a more confident team. One of the problems that Duke had, particularly early in the year in the first 3-game losing streak in the ACC, was they were constantly, you know, 10, 15 points behind in the first half, and you spend the entire game just trying to get back into the game. So I think that is something that's really been a difference. The defensive intensity, particularly on the perimeter, the way they've been able to defend the three has been awfully impressive the last handful of games. Maybe not by percentage against Virginia, but in terms of not allowing Virginia to maybe get as many attempts as they would like, because you know they're lethal from outside. But the 2 games prior, really good job defending the three. Which is good, but in some ways odd because Duke for years has been one of the best 3-point defensive teams in the country. And for most of this year, they've been last in the ACC and something like 320th in the country out of 340-something teams.
And what do you think has led to that lack of ability to prevent the 3-pointer? I mean, teams are shooting about 39% from deep against Duke, which is astronomical.
Yeah, I think it's from my perspective, it had a lot to do with Duke being young. And when you're young, you maybe don't commit as much to getting out in a defensive stance and putting pressure on guys, not because you don't want to play defense, not because you don't want to win, but you're kind of still learning the game and feeling your way through. And I think as I watch this team grow up, particularly on the defensive end, but also on the offensive end too, watch them play now, they're playing the game, if that makes sense. And early in the year, I kind of thought they were thinking their way through the game. And when you're thinking your way through the game, maybe you're a little bit more tentative. You're worried about the scouting report. You're trying to remember the play. You're just a second late on a closeout. You make a mistake on a switch. And just like that, shooters in this league, if they're open, it's in. So I think it's a little bit of everything combined, but I think it has a lot to do with just being young. And now they're a little bit older, even though it's within the same season.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Matthew Hurt and sort of the way he's been playing recently. What have you sort of seen out of him this year in making this jump?
Well, the biggest thing is the way he's figured out how to get his shot off. I don't think anyone's going to confuse Matthew, as good as player as he is and might be now the favorite for the ACC Player of the Year with the way he's played these last 3 games. He's not the most athletic guy on the floor on any given night. So he's got to come up with unique ways to get his shot off. And I'm not saying he's at this level, but, you know, you think about Larry Bird with the way he can get the 3-point shot off with the basketball behind his head, the step back moves, you know, the Dirk Nowitzki fadeaway. I mean, he's starting to increase those sorts of things because he's got to find ways to get his shot off because he's generally going to have a hand in his face. And the efficiency with which he shoots the basketball to me is the most impressive thing. This isn't a guy who's going to shoot, you know, 20, 25 shots a night. Excuse me. He's just not going to get that many looks because of what other teams are doing with their scouting reports defensively. So his ability to get his shot offs to me is most impressive. And he's worked with that, you know, for those that are watching, he's got a really high release point that helps him as well. And that's been a big change this year to get it off a little bit quicker, and finding just an inch of space is all he needs to get it off. And it'll be an interesting challenge against Syracuse because they've obviously got a bunch of guys who can fill it up as well.
Hurt is, you know, arguably, although probably not that much of an argument, that he's been Duke's best player this year. Usually when your best player is a forward of his size and you're going up against the 2-3 zone, they're going to man the high post. Do you see Hurt, though, being more on the outside because he's much more of a shooter maybe than a passer?
Well, he can certainly play inside, and I think that's the impact of Mark Williams, who's the 7-footer for the Blue Devils. I mean, I think earlier in the year, well, with the way the Blue Devils are going with their lineup, leaning a lot on small ball, which to be fair, they did against Virginia, but I think that had a lot to do with what they wanted to do defensively with switching everything. Hurts had to play the 5, and that causes you to play more inside. Well, now he can switch out and play the 4. Even against Virginia, he was really playing the 4 with Jamin Brakefield or Henry Coleman at times playing the 5, even though they were a little bit undersized inside. So, yeah, to answer your question, it does allow him to be out on the floor a little bit because of what they're doing with the 7-footer Mark Williams, that allows him to space things. And then, you know, he'll get his chance to be inside, but you're right, with the zone, that changes things a little bit. But it'll be interesting to see if Duke can really stretch out that Syracuse zone and make them have to come out and defend on the perimeter, and then you can get some matchups that you like inside and in around the paint. But Hurd is certainly comfortable being out around the three. I'd actually argue that he's more comfortable there. But to me, what'll be interesting to see with Hurd is not the three, not in the post. What can he do in that intermediate range? I mean, you hear the cliches all the time against a zone. Get the ball to the middle. Where that sweet spot to me, whether it be the left or right side of the lane, has really been where Hurd's been the most lethal with that 10, 12-foot fadeaway jumper. And to me, that could be something that could pay dividends against Syracuse.
Syracuse has struggled, you know, in years past, but especially this year in terms of going up against the center position just because of some personnel issues with injuries. So we like to sort of look into the bigs of whoever they're going into. You look at, you know, you just mentioned him briefly, a 7-footer and Mark Williams. What is there to sort of expect out of him, and what's his play style? Where do you sort of see him fitting in when he's going to be able to get some space and theoretically some open looks out of the short corner for him?
Well, I mean, he can certainly shoot it a little bit. We've seen a couple of jump shots out of him, much more comfortable playing around the post, but what he gives Duke is mostly on the defensive end of the floor. The block shot tear that he's been on prior to the Virginia game was just bananas. He was averaging about 3 blocks a game over a 6-game stretch after really not doing much for most of the season. So it's really what he gives the Blue Devils on the defensive end. Rim protection, energy on the glass. He can certainly do some scoring, but it's more like cleanup style or around the basket, tip follows and things like that. But he's a guy that's just kind of learning how to use his body, which is kind of odd for a guy who's 7 foot, 200 plus. But you can see that early in the year, timid's not the right word, but he was still figuring out how to throw his weight around, particularly in the collegiate game, and learn how to do it without fouling. I mean, we saw Jay Huff on Saturday night as a masterclass. He's a big guy that's dominating the game and not getting in foul trouble. And I think Mark Williams is learning his way to being that style of player, but he's still getting there, learning how to go straight up, learning how to contest without bringing your hands down. So on the defensive end is where you'd see the biggest impact from him.
And for Syracuse in the offensive post, one of their strongest players, if not their best player, Quincy Guerrier, has really dominated the boards this year. Who do you see as the best matchup for Guerrier? Do you think a guy like Hurd can contain him in the post?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how these guys match up individually. I mean, Duke has thrown out a zone at times this year too, so you never know how they're going to attack that. Wendell Moore Jr. Has been a really good defender for the Blue Devils out of the three, and sometimes they'll have him defend the four. Obviously, you got Buddy Boeheim you got to contend with, so you got to think about that matchup as well as you're lining things up defensively. But Hurd, you know, a lot of teams have tried to pick on Hurd on the offensive end of the floor, whether they create ISO matchups and things like that. But, you know, last night specifically, you know, we're talking on Sunday morning, his defensive play won the game with Kihei Clark, but also he was on Hauser quite a bit and was able to get out and contest on the outside. He's not going to block a ton of shots, but he did block the game-winning shot for Clark, got a piece of it at the top of the key. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that matchup. But the other thing you got to be aware of is Duke has gone back to something they've done the last several years, at least in the game against Virginia. I'll be interested to see if it happens against Syracuse. And that's switching everything because we talked earlier about getting out on three-point shooters and closeouts and things like that. I think because of, you know, getting caught in ball screens and having a hard time recovering, I wouldn't be surprised to see him switch a little bit more. So to that end, I don't think it will be kind of line up and try to defend somebody. But it could be Hurd. It could be Moore. It could be Brakefield. That's kind of been the interesting thing about this team, particularly since Jalen Johnson has opted out. You know it's got to be 7, 8, 9 guys. You just don't know who the three on that given night might be off the bench.
To look a little bit further into some of these new faces, not in terms of this season, but in terms of, you know, turnaround from last year to this year, you got two other freshmen that really, I mean, have played quite well so far this season in DJ Stewart and Jeremy Roque. What have you sort of seen out of those two? What can we expect out of them? And what sort of contributions do you sort of see them dumping in this game tomorrow?
Yeah, I think they surprise people because they're diminutive, right? These aren't huge guards. Both of them kind of light, but they're quick on their feet. DJ Stewart is an elite shooter, but don't get it twisted. He can finish around the basket. Had a huge baseline jumper last night late in the game against Virginia. And Jeremy Roach is just a dude. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but it's just a way he goes about his game, does the dirty work. If you are sleeping, he'll beat you on the drive. He can get to the basket. Really good finisher around the rim. Knows how to create. These are two guys that are gifted on the offensive end of the floor and can really break you down if they need to off the dribble. Defensively, they're getting better. They have the luxury of a Jordan Goldwire who can come out and be one of the best on-ball defenders in the country, which allows him to play off the ball and look how to get into passing lanes. But on the offensive end of the floor is where I think you'll see the biggest impact from those two, particularly Stewart with his three-point shooting. If you give him a little bit of space, he's open and he gets those looks because of the attention that Hurt will draw.
Yeah, Stewart's had some big three-point shooting games this year, a few lately as well. I want to look a little more macro. We've touched on the Virginia win last night, which was obviously massive for the Blue Devils. This morning at 12:10 a.m., so literally right when the day started, ESPN releases their Bubble Watch article, and the title is Welcome to the Bubble, Duke. What are your thoughts on Duke's tournament resume? Are you surprised to see they're on the bubble, or the press's bubble at least? Or do you think they should have been here all along and they got a shot at the tournament?
Well, pick your metric, right? I mean, KenPom has been favorable to the Blue Devils a lot this year. The net, maybe not so much. Quite honestly, I haven't seen the latest net rankings. I know the Blue Devils were like 60th on Saturday, probably moved up a handful of spots, picking up a quad one win. To me, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how do you balance the eye test versus the data? And that's going to be something the committee is going to have to figure out, because if you look at the eye test, you'd be hard pressed to convince me that the Blue Devils aren't one of those top at-large teams in the country. Now, the data, if you want to pick a part and make a case there, I guess you can. But I think the other thing you have to look at as you're evaluating these teams, you know, Duke has lost six games in ACC play by a combined 28 points. I mean, it's not like they've been getting run and then turned a corner. They've been right there throughout. Obviously, you got to win. I'm not taking that away. Do I think that the Blue Devils are in right now? Who knows? But that's why you got four games left to go and still some work to do. But it certainly feels like they're on a trajectory that gives them a chance, and that's all you can ask for. And that, to me, is what makes this particular game very intriguing, because I think you've got two teams sitting in a very similar boat that a win over the other might be something they look back towards at the end of the year to say that's what got us in.
Duke up to 55 in the net as of this morning. And from, you know, an organization and an area growing up in Central New York that has gotten very used to this, welcome to the bubble down in Durham over there, I'll tell you that. I want to go, Ben just went a little bit macro. I want to go a little even more macro. The last time Syracuse was at Cameron Indoor, you got the Elijah Hughes three-quarter court crazy shot at the end of the first half, and inevitably, you know, a very entertaining overtime game. Syracuse comes from behind after Duke just sort of runs the table for the first 10 or 5 or so minutes. Can you just sort of bring us back to that game and maybe even that shot specifically and your perspective of that whole situation?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, the Trey Jones, RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson team. And that game, from a Duke perspective, looked like, to your point, the Blue Devils were going to run Syracuse out of the building in the first 5 minutes. And it's hard to say how much of an impact the Trey Jones injury had. You know, just one of those freak plays, no one's fault. He goes down with a shoulder injury, two guys battling to get a basketball. And that changed the entire tenor of the game, because obviously when you prep for your point guard to be out there and then you lose your point guard and it's a point guard of the caliber of Trey Jones, that changes things. Obviously on the defensive end of the floor, it looked like that night more than the offensive end of the floor, because the Blue Devils couldn't stop Syracuse. They still scored, but, you know, and Jim Boeheim, you know, Mike Krzyzewski is one of the best coaches of all time, but so is Jim Boeheim. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to take advantage of an opportunity like that. And it was a whale of a ball game. And you mentioned the half court shot from three. I mean, it was one of those nights Syracuse couldn't miss, but neither could Duke. It was a whale of a game. But from my perspective, the game changed when Trey Jones went out. And that's what changed it as much as anything, because up until that point, Syracuse was turning the ball over quite a bit because of the defense that Duke had. And I think it was, you know, a double-digit lead, might even have been a 15-point lead at that point when Trey Jones went out, and then things obviously totally changed.
To, you know, take this as macro as we can, Syracuse and Duke, since joining the ACC, Syracuse is 4-6 against the Blue Devils. But really, I mean, Duke has been, you know, far better outside of that first year or two of Syracuse being in the ACC. What do you think it is that sort of just gives Syracuse and Duke the ability to play these tight games, even when one team is statistically and rankings wise far and beyond the other one?
Well, when you got 30,000 plus behind you, it doesn't hurt anything, right? I mean, I think, and this is not unique to Syracuse, but when Duke goes on the road, it's a different team a lot of times because it's a different atmosphere, and the crowd that your home crowd will give you a lift. But also, you know, there's a reason Jim Boeheim worked with Mike Krzyzewski on the Olympic teams. I mean, you've got two really elite level coaches, programs that have an identity, that know what they do. And also a lot of times these matchups are later in the year because television wants them that way, because, you know, they like the looks of the crowds and things like that. And teams are a little bit older and maybe more mature. And it always feels like whenever Duke does play Syracuse, you mentioned the bubble watch, it always feels like Syracuse is on the upswing and starting to get their legs underneath them. And they come out and play awfully well. And I expect nothing different on Monday night. But you got two all-time great coaches. You got two all-time great programs. So, yes, the personnel year in and year out have been a little bit different. But you expect it to be a war every time these two get together. And as I said, I expect something similar come Monday night.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Both teams kind of on the upswing. Syracuse with maybe their best 10 minutes of basketball after 30 minutes of nearly losing to Notre Dame, and Duke with perhaps its biggest win of the year. I want to do something quickly that we do with almost all of our guests, like storylines. So if Duke is going to win the game, it's because of blank. And if Syracuse is going to win the game, it's because of blank.
I think if the Blue Devils win the game, it's going to be because they took care of the basketball. Obviously, I was getting ready for the Duke-Virginia game, but got to see a good bit of that second half comeback for the Orange. And yes, the shooting for Buddy Boeheim was impressive. Don't get me wrong, but it felt like a 10-minute stretch. I'm sure it was like actually 5 or 6 where Notre Dame couldn't get a shot off. I mean, they were turning the ball over like crazy, and that was because of the defense that Syracuse was playing, getting out in passing lanes. And that's how that 20-point lead evaporated. From my perspective, it was what Syracuse did on the defensive end of the floor that was so impressive against a Notre Dame team that obviously won in Cameron and can shoot it at an unbelievable clip. So I think if Duke wins, it's because they took care of the basketball. And I think if Syracuse wins, it's because of their three-point shooting. Buddy Boeheim was able to get his looks and things were working from the perimeter. As I said, at times this year, it's been an Achilles heel for the Blue Devil defense, not of late during this three-game winning streak, but can they continue that against another team that comes in and can really shoot the basketball awfully well? So to me, those would be the two things that I'd have an eye on.
One final question here. We've got a handful of our WAER sports and talk staff en route to Durham over the next day and a half-ish. Where is the pregame meal? Where should they go to grab a bite before tip off?
There's a wonderful little barbecue place before, because there isn't anything in the arena. They should know that there's water and sodas. So they make sure they eat before they get there. But there's a place called Q-Shack and it's right down the road. I'm not going to give the specific address and everything like that, but it's an awesome little barbecue joint. I feel like if you come to North Carolina, I'm from Syracuse. I know you guys have a pretty good barbecue joint yourselves, but we've got some good barbecue down this way. So that's what I would recommend. Get a little bit of brisket before you get things tipped.
All right. I'll relay the message down to them.
Whoa. Ben's about to throw a haymaker here. I'm ready.
Yeah, for our barbecue joint is okay. Like, wow. It's pretty good. I would be surprised if it contended with anything, you know, even remotely near the southern part of the country.
Oh, and you agree? See, I'm flipping the script here now.
I know. I side with Ben because we took the road trip down to Clemson earlier and we had some of their barbecue and we've had some southern barbecue. The barbecue we've got right here is good, but it's relative good. So I'll give you guys the credit there.
And now that you got me thinking, I would recommend. See, we don't play around here. We put brisket in a baked potato, so that's what I would recommend they do. Go for the brisket baked potato with some hush puppies. Do that early though, because you're gonna need a nap before we get to tip.
That is awesome. That is, I'll have to find a way to recreate that up here, or maybe just get in the car and join them at some point down there for this meal. Thank you so much for taking the time. We really enjoyed this conversation, and we really enjoyed prepping for whenever we find ourselves in Durham to get that brisket filled potato, because that sounds unbelievable.
No, I appreciate it, guys.
One last thank you to David Shoemate. Obviously, the food recommendations at the end are always fun, but it brings back the memories when you talk a little bit at the end there about that Elijah Hughes shock, the big upset by Syracuse the last time they went down to Cameron Indoor. And that was such a chaotic game, fun game, don't know what to say about it game. And it sort of brings us into this situation. You talk about, and the narrative throughout college basketball this season, of the Blue Bloods just not being good. And it's so true. And we're going to throw Syracuse into the Blue Blood conversation, even though ESPN doesn't always want to. We're going to keep them in there. And it's one of those games right now where you look at Syracuse, you look at Duke, and they've both struggled in their own right throughout this season. Duke on the upswing, Syracuse not really on the up or downswing right now, just sort of playing basketball where you think they could play basketball. They've got moments of highs, moments of lows, and that's why I'm saying they're not going up or down, because that just is Syracuse basketball at this point. It's going to be an interesting game. I mean, you look at the way Duke has played in those last three games since Jalen Johnson departs from the program and goes his own way to close out the season, and they've found their stride. And whether you're saying that it's because Jalen Johnson left or because it just clicked finally, we're not here to say that necessarily, but all I'm saying is the last three games that the Duke basketball team has played, they look like a different program. So agree with Jim Boeheim, disagree with Jim Boeheim, I don't care. If you look at the last three games they played, it looks like a different Duke basketball team than the first 15 or so games here in this season.
You're trying to make me go there. I'm not going to go there. But yes, Duke is playing well. You trample NC State, I think that gets people's attention. Wake Forest win, I personally don't really care about. But then Virginia, that's the big one. That's where, you know, we mentioned it in the interview. The bubble article today on ESPN is all about, well, Duke's now on the bubble. And rightfully so. I think Duke has earned its place on the bubble. It's interesting. I think the one thing Syracuse can hang their hat on, Duke has not won four games in a row at any point this year. A three-game win streak early in the season, then a three-game losing streak, then back-to-back wins, including wins over Georgia Tech and Clemson, then a three-game losing streak. Now three in a row, Duke's trying to go for four the first time this year. And it's, I think, a fairly even contest. It's not often that we get to see a Duke team and a Syracuse team and think about them on equal statures, but you know, I can't say this is a can't lose for Syracuse, as I talked about can't lose versus must win before, but it's really, you know, jumping back and forth over that line between can't lose and must win, because while this Duke win helps, it's not everything for Syracuse to get into the tournament, because as you said, Duke, frankly, is just not Duke right now. They're a shell of Duke. They're wearing the same uniforms, but the wins are not the same. So it'll be interesting. As much as the Jalen Johnson narrative chugs its way along for Syracuse, I think it's a huge plus that he's not there. I think capable forwards are a massive issue for the Orange. I think he and Hurt together probably would have overwhelmed the 2-3. Now you're talking about Hurt being the main facilitator, and he's not a huge passer. I think that's a big deal for SU going into this matchup.
Yeah, when you look at the remaining schedule for Syracuse, they've got two quad one opportunities left in Duke and Georgia Tech on the road, and then North Carolina, which is currently a quad two at home, but is right on the fringe. You've got to start rooting for North Carolina leading up to that game, because they can easily become a quad one opponent by the time they come to the Dome in just about 2 weeks. But when you look at this Duke game, you mentioned it. It's an advantage that they don't have Jalen Johnson on the court, but at the same time, Duke has found its stride without Jalen Johnson. One of the things that I found interesting from David Shoemate is he mentioned that depending on the metric, you sort of have a different narrative of Duke. Obviously, the net for a while was pretty mean to Duke in terms of where they had him. But in KenPom, I mean, KenPom never really took Duke out of the top tier. Like, their worst they got this season was 41. And you think about where they were just a week ago when they're 7-8, have a losing record. They remained at 41 in KenPom. So they're doing things right. Their offensive efficiency is some of the top stuff in the nation. They are so good offensively, and they're not getting blown out, which is a narrative that I think should really stand out. They're losing close games, and it's sort of that we say it with Syracuse sometimes. They're not able to just slit the throat at the end. They get into the position where they can win it and they can take them out, and they just sort of, you know, limp off for a little bit, and that's been the issue. Duke's been in games. They've been able to win games. They've been close. You look at the losses, and they're not blown out. They're all, you know, five-point losses, five or fewer point losses, obviously outside of the Illinois game where they lose by 15. But, oh, well, you lost to team. That's okay. Like, you figure this out. And they've played close games. They're efficient. They can win. The narrative that this team is bad is, frankly, incorrect. They just had a bad record. And when you look at what they've done in the last three games and you look at the sort of rhythm they've started to create and you look at this five-man roster with Jeremy Roach and Stewart and Moore and Hurt and Mark Williams, they've got a lot of talent. Williams is going to be a nightmare for Syracuse, as Syracuse has struggled with bigs traditionally in this last, you know, four or five season stretch. But specifically this year, Williams is going to be a tough matchup, even though he's not an offensive guy. He's going to be able to crash those boards, create second chance opportunities. You've got to be able to limit, because this is a very, very talented Duke offense. If you give them those extra chances, we're going to beat that into the bush. It doesn't matter who they play. There are talented offenses in the ACC. If you give teams second chance opportunities, you will not win basketball games. And that has been the issue when you look at box scores every time Syracuse loses.
Yeah, they're kind of the anti-Syracuse Duke is. I mean, with the close losses, and I don't know. I think while I like our friend Mr. Pomeroy a lot, I think he's been a little bit soft on Duke this year. I don't think the Illinois loss, like you brought up, was a bad loss. I don't think that the Michigan State loss is necessarily a bad loss at the time it happened during the year. But, you know, the Miami loss, it's pretty tough. Syracuse absolutely thumped Miami. And the Hurricanes, while they were a little bit fun at the beginning of the year, have not turned that into very many wins. So I think that I understand where the Nets coming from in a sense. I happen to think they're somewhere probably in the middle of where the net rankings would suggest and where KenPom's rankings would suggest, which really lands them kind of near where Syracuse is, kind of in that middle 40, you know, 50 range. But it's tough. There's no doubt that this is going to be a tough game. Hurt's been great over the last three contests, 22, 22, 24 points scored. He's, you know, at this point in the year, still shooting 47% from three on a number of attempts per game. I believe he jacks it up five times a game. So that's scary. And I think watching the first 24 minutes of the Syracuse Notre Dame game, if you know that a big guy's coming in shooting 47%, you just have those visions of Leshefsky pulling up and hitting threes in SU's face, because that's a serious, serious problem for the zone. I do just think Syracuse might be able to score with them, though. I think it depends on what Syracuse shows up to the game, and that's been really the story of the entire year. But, you know, I happen to think that in this matchup, Syracuse can hang with Duke in a way that they haven't since that upset win back in 2018 when I was a freshman. So it's definitely a tough task. It's still the Duke Blue Devils. It's still Cameron, but there are no crazies. There's no Zion or insert amazing top one, two, or three recruit there. And it's a game that Syracuse has got to win. I mean, maybe if you lose it and beat Georgia Tech in North Carolina, things still go your way. But I don't think Syracuse can take chances like that. As crazy as it would have sounded to me last year or the year before, Syracuse has to beat Duke if Syracuse wants to make the tournament. And there's really no other way around it.
We're going to average out KenPom and the net here to give you your Duke ranking, as Ben said. And that puts Duke at 43. And in the net, Syracuse is 46. And in KenPom, they're 43. So when you average those out, they're within five-ish spots of each other. This is as evenly matched of a Syracuse-Duke game that you'll see probably since maybe the early years. You go back to like 2014, that first year of the ACC, when Duke comes to the Dome and they go to overtime because both of those teams were so good. This is a different story. These are two middle-of-the-pack sort of teams right now in terms of record, in terms of tournament chances, in terms of everything. And it's as even as we've seen in the last, you know, five-ish years in this matchup. When you look at how Syracuse can win this game, Ben, who is the guy you circle for Syracuse? Who do you need to step up? Who do you need to have a decent game? Or who do you just predict is going to have a solid game?
I like Buddy to stay hot. And I think it could come from multiple places, but three-point shooting, as Mr. Shoemate mentioned to us, is a major key. As much as Duke has played it better recently, you can't play all that well if your three-point shooting percentage allowed is still 39% on the year. That's pretty brutal. So I think for Syracuse, you know, I think it's Boeheim, but if it's Gerard or if it's Griffin or if Quincy chips in, you know, threes just need to come from somewhere. I think that the Orange have the capabilities. They've touched it at times, not touched it at times this season, to really go all out and nail a bunch of threes. If Buddy Boeheim, not 29, but if Buddy Boeheim can contribute 18, 19, 20 points on, you know, three or four three-pointers and a couple other guys help out, better game from Griffin, I think SU's got a good shot here. I don't think that Duke's going to score a million points on Syracuse. You know, the offense for the Blue Devils has been really up and down this season.
I'm going to look to Marek Dolezal, and I'm not looking on the offensive side. I think he'll get his fill. I want to see him take a step defensively. He's had moments where he's been really solid in the middle of the zone, but at the same time, there have been a lot of moments where I've been just yelling at the TV or yelling in my head that he's got to be able to make a little bit better of a decision and being a little bit more aggressive defensively. He seems like he's been a little bit complacent with just the hands up mentality. And I get that you're taught hands up and you don't want to pick up the foul, but I think there's a happy medium between a hack and him playing a little bit more solid on ball defense. When you get into those situations, when you're going up against an opponent's big or not even an opponent's big, just anybody down in the post, I think he can be a little bit more solid. I'd like to see him make that step. And if he can make that step, I think it puts Syracuse in a really solid position to be able to try and stifle this solid Duke offense as much as possible. Ben, no predictions yet. We're going to save that for the Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Keep that with us tomorrow on Monday, excuse me. I'm throwing my days off. I'm used to these Tuesday weekdays. We're going with a Monday. We got a big Monday action, and it's going to be, where do you sort of lean in terms of your key right now? Obviously not releasing any of our predictions because those are Twitter exclusives, my friend. But when you look at the key, where do you fall for Syracuse right now to try and get this win in a very feasible win? And as you said, it's not a must win or a can't lose really, but it's a, you need a win and you need to find a way to get in the win column again.
Yeah, you know, I go back to the three-point shooting. I think on a more macro look, just you got to outscore them, which is obviously how you win any single basketball game that's ever been played. But I think, the Duke offense is shaky at times, you know, recently pretty good, but over certain stretches as well, not topping over 70 on a consistent basis. Syracuse is a team that I think has been topping, you know, 75 to 80 points on a semi-consistent basis, except when they play quad one teams. So I think for the Orange, you know, you really got to make your shots. It's the classic thing Boeheim says in the press conference that isn't genius, but at the end of the day, this team has found a way to get decent looks. I think, you know, if I want to get more specific, I thought going inside really helped Syracuse's offense last game. Boeheim in the whole first half was going inside a ton, and then they sag off him a bit. He starts hitting threes and all of a sudden you can't stop him. Marek Dolezal, he was playing pretty well also inside, ended up with 18 points, and going to the foul line was big. This might be one of the best foul shooting teams in Syracuse basketball history. So I think going inside to help your outside play will be incredibly important for the Orange.
I'm going to take a bit of the cop out here. It's been the narrative all year, the theory all year. They got to control the rebounding. They've got to be able to hold their own in this rebounding battle because they can. I don't think Duke is that overpowering to them in terms of rebounding. I think Syracuse can hold their own, which is why it's essential for them to do so. You look at Syracuse's six losses, out-rebounded by double digits in all of those. They've only been out-rebounded one more time outside of that, and it was a very narrow margin. So when you look at their losses, they're getting destroyed in the rebounding battle, and a lot of those you can circle the offensive rebounds. I think this is a team that Syracuse should, and I've said they can hold their own with in the rebounding battle. I think they can fight for these boards, and I think they can be all right. And if they are all right, I think they have a really, really good shot at winning this basketball game and being in contention down the stretch with a solid Duke team over the last, you know, three games in the last week or so that they've been playing. It's going to be a tough one, and that's why you play the game. Obviously, anything can happen. You can catch that entire game with us at WAER.org. You can listen to us at 88.3 FM. If you're in the Central New York area, find us on the WAER app. There are a lot of ways to listen to the game. There are a lot of ways to listen to us now. We're on YouTube if you haven't seen us over there. Ostrom Avenue Pod over there. Give us a like. Give us a subscription. Feel free to comment on any of these videos. Let us know what you think. Let us know where you need our content to go, what questions you need answers over there. You can do the same thing on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod over there. And if you're listening to us on wherever you get your podcasts, a like, a subscription, a review, a rating, they all go a very, very long way. And we love to get those interactions. So to keep that up, I mean, Ben, we're expanding. We really are. We've got continued expansion in the works. We are expanding pretty damn soon to a third guest on this podcast. A third host on this podcast will be introduced very shortly. So keep it locked wherever you're seeing us or listening to us, because there is a lot in store to finish out this basketball season and to start off the Syracuse men's lacrosse season. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much for listening and watching. We'll catch you next week. Stay safe.